By now it was May 22, 1522. The winds had abated, and Victoria was at last able to proceed on a northerly course. Elcano led the weather-beaten ship and her worn-out crew until what is now called Saldanha Bay, just north of Cape Town, where the men rested. There is no record that they thought of themselves as heroic for having outlasted the storm surrounding the Cape of Good Hope. There was no longer any boldness or swagger about them. They had suffered too much for that. The sea had not killed them, but it had humbled them. And they were simply grateful to be alive. Nothing else mattered in comparison with that singular fact. When the men recovered a bit of their strength, there was work to be done. They occupied themselves loading enough water and wood to see them home. For once they were not alone. They shared the bay with a Portuguese ship plying the India route. Elcano imprudently risked making his presence known to the Portuguese captain, who saluted and sailed away. Two ships at the end of the world pursuing their disparate goals. Although Victoria had passed the supreme navigational test, the torments afflicting her crew were not over yet. On June 8, 1522, she crossed the equator yet again. This was the fourth time since the departure from Seville. Pigafetta reported, "Then we sailed northwest for 2 months continually, without taking on any fresh food or water." Inevitably, scurvy returned to devastate the crew. Pigafetta said 21 men died during that short time. He continued, "Finally, constrained by our great extremity, we went to the islands. On Wednesday, July 9th, we reached one of the St. Jacob Islands, by which Pigafetta meant Santiago, the largest of the Cape Verde Islands, off the coast of West Africa, the very same islands that had served as the marker for the line of demarcation under the Treaty of Tordesillas. The islands remained a Portuguese stronghold, a center for commerce in materials and in men. The seas surrounding the Cape Verde Islands were familiar to Portuguese mariners, too familiar, in fact, for Victoria's safety. The farther north she journeyed, the more likely she was to encounter vindictive Portuguese authorities. As soon as Victoria dropped anchor in the port of Ribeira Grande on Santiago Island, Espinosa dispatched a longboat for food needed by the starving crew. Fearing that the Portuguese would likely pounce, the men crafted a story designed to elicit sympathy and avoid uncomfortable facts. They posed as an unlucky, storm-battered Spanish cargo ship, hardly worth troubling over. The ruse seemed to work, and Pigafetta exulted, "With those good words, and with our merchandise, we got 2 boatloads of rice." As an afterthought, Elcano told his men to confirm the date with the Portuguese, just to make sure the ship's log remained accurate after nearly 3 years' record-keeping. The reply, Thursday, baffled the sailors. Pigafetta wrote, "We were greatly surprised, for it was Wednesday with us, and we could not see how we had made a mistake, for I had always kept well, and I had set down every day without interruption. How could they have omitted a day?" "As they learned later," Pigafetta said, "it was no error, but as the voyage had been made continually toward the west, and we'd returned to the same place as does the sun, we had made a gain of 24 hours. This was no mere bookkeeping oversight. Albo, Pigafetta, and the rest of the survivors erred because the international dateline did not yet exist. No Western cosmologist or astronomer, not even Ptolemy, had anticipated that a correction would be necessary to compensate for sailing around the globe. It took the first circumnavigation to demonstrate the need for a 24-hour gain. As Victoria was about to slip away from Santiago Island, Elcano made a serious mistake. Wrote Albo, "On Monday, the 14th, we sent the ship's boat ashore for more rice. It returned the next day and went back for another load. We waited until night, but it did not return. Then we waited until the next day, but it never returned. Something had gone awry, but no one aboard the ship knew what it was. One possibility was that the 4 Indians who had gone ashore to fetch rice tried to purchase food with cloves. When the Portuguese authorities saw this contraband, which could only have come from the Spice Islands, they became deeply suspicious of Victoria. Albo continued. We went nearer the port to discover the reason of the delay, whereupon a vessel came out and demanded our surrender, saying that they would send us with the ship that was coming from the Indies, and that they would place their men in our ship, for thus had their officials ordered. Victoria's officers stoutly resisted. Albo wrote, We requested them to send us our men in the ship's boat. They replied that they would bear our request to their officials. We answered that we would take another tack and wait. Accordingly, we tacked about and set all our sails full and left with 22 men, both sick and well. The number probably included 18 Europeans and 4 captives acquired en route. 22 men, all that remained of the approximately 260 who had left Seville with the Armada 3 years earlier. It was now July 15th, 1522. With barely enough men to handle the ship, Elcano took Victoria along a northerly course to her home port in Spain. Meanwhile, leaks constantly threatened to scuttle Victoria, and the men, in their exhausted condition, were forced to work the pumps night and day, simply to stay afloat. Their incessant labor paid off, and by July 28th, Tenerife swung into view, signaling the beginning of a new course toward the Azores to negotiate the northerly winds. Elcano approached the Azores, hoping to take on the fresh provisions they desperately needed and depart before the Portuguese pursued them. But he wisely judged the maneuver too dangerous to attempt. As they worked the pumps, the ship's crew discerned Cape St. Vincent to the north on September 4th. It would be the last important landmark they observed before reaching their goal, and it was a fitting sight, for Sagres, the location of Prince Henry the Navigator's Academy, was located right on the cape. Cape St. Vincent disappeared in the mists as the Portuguese trades bore Victoria and her skeleton crew east toward the mouth of the Guadalquivir River, its waters churning just as they had 3 years earlier, when the proud Armada de Malacca began the expedition to the Spice Islands. On Saturday, September 6th, 1522, wrote Antonio Pigafetta, we entered the Bay of Sanlúcar with only 18 men, the majority of them sick, all that were left of the 60 men who had left the Moluccas. Some died of hunger, some deserted at the island of Timor, and some were put to death for crimes. At last, Pigafetta allowed himself a moment of pride concerning the chief accomplishment of the Armada de Malacca. From the time we left that bay, he wrote, until the present day, we sailed 14,460 leagues, nearly 60,000 miles, and furthermore completed the circumnavigation of the world from east to west. To complete her journey around the world, Victoria and her decimated crew had to make one last passage from the harbor of Sanlúcar de Barrameda along the Guadalquivir River into Seville. Elcano sent for a small boat to tow the battered craft and her exhausted crew to the teeming city, now abuzz with talk and excitement concerning the unprecedented voyage. Although her hull was in such poor condition and leaking so copiously that the men had to keep pumping all the way just to stay afloat, Victoria completed her journey along the river to Seville and tied up at a quay on September the 10th. Under the scrutiny of representatives of the king and his financiers, dock workers unloaded the precious cargo that Victoria had traveled around the world to collect, cloves. Even without the other 4 ships, the amount of cloves in Victoria's hold was sufficient to turn a profit for the expedition's backers. The king's agents were pleased to note that the cloves were of first quality, far exceeding those obtained from merchants who had acquired them in the traditional manner, for middlemen using land routes. The cloves filled no less than 381 sacks, weighing 524 quintals. Their value came to 7,888,864 maravedis. By royal order, the cargo passed directly to the expedition's backer, Cristobal de Haro. Within weeks, he was in possession of the precious cloves, which he dispatched to his brother Diego in Antwerp for sale. The profits were divided between the Haros, agents for the Fugger family, and the nearly insolvent Spanish crown. Beyond the profits from spices, the completion of Magellan's voyage finally gave the Spanish a water route to the Spice Islands if they wanted it. The expedition had ended, but its effects on Spain and on world history were just beginning.